Welcome to the deep dive. This is where we really get into the details of a source, pull out the key stuff for you.
Yep. And today we're diving into the experiences of Donald Doc Dunaway. He's a retired Air Force captain.
Right. Focusing on his service in Southeast Asia. The source is an interview from the Military Tales YouTube channel. It's episode 20 called Another Side of That War.
And it gives a really valuable look at combat search and rescue, or CSR, specifically from the fixed-wing support side.
Exactly. So Dunaway's unit, their main job was supporting the Jolly Green rescue helicopters.
Those crews were going into incredibly hot zones to pick up downed airmen.
And a key thing right off the bat from this interview, episode 20, is that these guys, both the helicopter crews and the escort pilots like Dunaway, they were often volunteers.
That dedication, that's really the core of what we're looking at today, this drive to save their own.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit more. Dunaway's details. He retired as a captain.
Correct. Served in Southeast Asia 68 through 69. His unit was the 62nd Fighter Squadron Commando.
Which later became the Special Operations Squadron.
Yeah, exactly. And they weren't always in the same place. They moved base.
Started at Udorn, then went to NKP, Nakhon Phanom Royal Thai Air Force Base.
Right, NKP. That became a major base for these kinds of special ops.
And listening to episode 20, you really get the sense that his unit's mission was, well, unique.
Absolutely vital. They were the only unit in the whole theater whose primary job was this rescue support, flying the A-1 Sky Raider.
What exactly did that involve? Escorting, suppressing fire?
All of that. Flying cover, trying to keep enemy heads down while the Jolly Greens went in. Dunaway called it flying daisy chain patterns, basically circling protectively.
Sounds incredibly intense. And he actually described this work, didn't he? In the interview.
He did. He called it the epitome of military service. Said, it doesn't get any better than that. That was after his 12 months with this all-volunteer unit.
Wow. The epitome. What do you think made it feel like the peak for him? The direct life-saving? The danger?
Well, I think it's likely a mix, you know? Saving lives directly, that's got to be incredibly rewarding. He mentions the bonds, too. These volunteer units were tight-knit.
Makes sense. Shared risk.
Definitely. And he really stressed the partnership with the Jolly Green crews, called them a sister unit there at NKP.
A shared understanding, even if the choppers came from different bases sometimes.
Exactly. That shared volunteer spirit, the danger, and that motto.
That others may live. Powerful stuff. Dunaway links directly to leave no man behind.
He does. It captures that selflessness perfectly. You can hear in episode 20 how much it meant to him.
He called it the most gratifying work of his whole career, his 20 years in the Air Force.
Yeah, which really tells you something about the mission and the risks they took.
Risks which became very, very real about 6 months into his tour, January 69.
Oh, yeah. He recounts this mission in episode 20. It's harrowing. Their assistant operations officer got shot down during another rescue.
So the very next morning, they're launching a mission to get him back. First light.
And it was bad from the start. Dunaway says he took hits on every single pass he made over the area.
Every pass. Good grief.
And then his wingman either got hit or ran out of fuel, had to pull off.
Leaving Dunaway to check his own fuel.
And he finds he has only 50 pounds left. 50! That's practically fumes in an A1.
Unbelievable. 50 pounds. You listen to him tell it in the interview, and the tension is just palpable. But he still had to support the ongoing rescue.
Right. Other escorts were managing the primary effort, but he's still there, critically low on fuel, and then the Jolly Green goes in for the pickup.
And things go from bad to worse.
Tragically, yes. The helicopter gets hit by 37mm anti-aircraft fire, big rounds.
Devastating.
A PJ on board, a pararescue jumper lost his leg. And the chopper itself was so damaged it had to crash land.
Oh, my God. So now you have another downed aircraft crew, plus the original guy they were trying to rescue, all on the ground.
An absolute nightmare scenario. But as Dunaway relates in episode 20, the backup Jolly Green went straight in.
Didn't hesitate. Nope. And managed to pull everyone out, the whole crew from the crashed helicopter, plus the first pilot. Just incredible airmanship and guts.
Truly living up to that others may live. While all that drama is unfolding, Dunaway is limping back to NKP.
Exactly. Declares an emergency, gets cleared for a downwind landing, which isn't ideal, but necessary.
Lines it okay.
He does. But then the ground crew tells him his Sky Raider has 9 more bullet holes in it from small arms fire.
9 more, after everything else.
And the kicker. As he reaches for the mixture control to shut the engine down, it just quits. ran completely out of fuel right there.
On the runway.
Yep. He says in the interview that was the closest he ever came to bailing out.
I can only imagine. And the original guy, the assistant ops officer, Pete Morris.
Yeah.
Was he rescued?
Yes. While Dunaway was heading back, the rescue was completed. But Morris had a rough couple of days.
How so?
He got shot down on January 17th and then again on January 18th.
Like twice in 2 days. Yep. Dunaway mentions it in episode 20, calls it a definite career lowlight for Morris. Apparently, there was kind of an unwritten rule. Get shot down twice, maybe take a break from combat flying.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Wow. That story really paints a picture. Let's talk about the plane itself, the A1 Sky Raider. It's got an interesting history.
It really does. Designed late WWII, pre-Korea, became known as a real workhorse, a tough attack plane. Dunaway calls it a killing machine.
Which sounds a bit intense given their rescue support role.
Yeah.
Why that reputation?
Well, even in support, its capabilities were offensive. It could carry a lot of ordnance bombs, rockets, great for suppressing enemy fire. Plus, it was famously rutted. It could take hits and keep flying.
So even defensively, it packed a punch.
Exactly. And it wasn't just about power. It weighed, what, 18,000 pounds empty, but could go up to 36,000 pounds fully loaded. A beast.
Yet Dunaway seemed fond of it. Called it an honest airplane, a splendid machine to fly.
He did. And remember, the Air Force got these from the Navy, right? As the Navy was phasing them out of carrier use.
So an older design, but picked specifically for this job. What made it better than, say, faster jets?
Speed wasn't the key here. The Sky Raider could fly slow, really slow. And it could loiter, just hang around over the rescue area for a long time.
Persistence. Jets would have to keep cycling in and out.
Right. The A1 could stay on station, provide continuous cover, use its weapons precisely if needed. And its toughness was a huge plus. It was the right tool for that specific, very demanding job.
Makes perfect sense. Now, Dunaway also talked about the culture around these units in episode 20, the camaraderie. He mentioned a tradition at the NKP Officers Club.
Oh, yeah, the Jolly Green Doll. He describes this doll sitting on the back bar and next to it a chalkboard where they kept track of local rescues by the 40th Air Rescue Squadron.
Okay. And what happened when a rescue was successful?
Well, if the rescued pilot was up to it, he, along with the Jolly Green crew and the escort pilots involved, they'd all get thrown over the bar, physically.
Thrown over the bar, seriously.
Seriously. And then the survivor, the guy they just rescued, would get the honor of going behind the bar and updating the rescue count on the board.
That is quite a tradition. A Jolly Green Doll watching over the bar tally. You can imagine the atmosphere.
He even mentions, you know, multiple low-altitude passes over the bar sometimes. Lots of energy. Says the club officer was always trying to protect the breakables.
It sounds wild, but also like a necessary release valve, maybe?
Yeah.
A way to bond and celebrate surviving.
I think absolutely. In that kind of high-stress environment, rituals like that, even rowdy ones, probably helped build cohesion, celebrate success, let off steam. It says a lot about coping mechanisms.
Yeah, a really vivid picture of that tight-knit community. And when Dunaway reflects on it all, especially giving advice, his passion for CR sort of really comes through.
Oh, completely. He recommends it strongly, calls it the most gratifying thing he did, despite how tough it was.
And he highlights that volunteer aspect again, right?
Yeah.
Serving with people who chose to be there.
Exactly. Driven by that shared mission. And he comes back again to the motto, that others may live.
And gives huge credit to the PJs.
Calls them the undeniable king of the rescue force. Because they're the ones physically going down there embodying that motto.
It's clear this whole experience shaped him profoundly. He also touched briefly on his personal life in the interview. His kids were born before he deployed.
Yes, and he mentions his wife's reaction to him volunteering for this dangerous duty.
What did he say?
Said she gave him a hard time, and apparently still does. But then he adds, you know, they'd been married 65 years at that point. He just learned to take the beating and keep moving.
Huh. A glimpse into the family side. The sacrifices aren't just made by the service member, are they?
Not at all. It hints at the worry and stress back home. That commitment involves the whole family.
Definitely. So, wrapping up this deep dive into episode 20 of Military Tales, we've really seen the sheer dedication involved in combat search and rescue.
The intensity, the constant risk. Dunaway's story, especially that January 69 mission, really brings it home.
And we got insight into the A1 Sky Raider, why it was perfect for the job, and the unique camaraderie, like that officers' club tradition.
Yeah, it all paints a picture of a very specific, very demanding world.
And the Dunaway's perspective consistently comes back to how deeply gratifying it was, serving that principle, that others may live. a testament to selflessness.
Which really leaves you, the listener, with something to think about. What does that level of commitment facing those kinds of risks for someone else truly signify? What does it tell us about service and the human spirit when people dedicate themselves so fully to ensuring that others may live?